Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's check in with South Dakota public broadcasting journalists across the state now for our weekly State House Roundtable. Joining us from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in SDPB's Black Hills studio, we welcome Seth Tupper. Hey, Seth.
Hi, Lori.
Joining me in the Kirby Family Studio in SDPB Sioux Falls Studio, Jackie Hendry. Hey, Jackie.
Hey, hey.
Stephanie Rissler is with us from the SDPB Studios in Vermilion on the campus of the University of South Dakota. Welcome back, Steph.
Thank you.
And Lee Strubinger is joining us from the Capitol Building in Pier Haley.
Good to be here.
All right. This is the time where we kind of check in on what's been happening here and take a peek forward at what we're anticipating coming up next. And we're going to start in Rapid City with Seth Tupper, because, Seth, you've been covering a lot of gun legislation. Give us the big picture here, please.
Yeah, so last year, legislators, pro-gun legislators, kind of climbed the mountaintop, if you will, when they passed a bill repealing the requirement to carry a permit with a concealed weapon. Permitless carry, if you want to call that. They passed that last year, and they also passed a law allowing certain people to carry guns in the Capitol. And those were, big bills that pro-gun legislators had been trying to pass for quite a few years. And so you maybe would have thought that this year there'd be a little bit of a fall off in activity with gun legislation, but that hasn't been the case. There's been a lot of bills filed, 12 by my count so far, and it might be more by now, that have something to do with guns or firearms. And so there's a lot of activity on maybe smaller fights than there were last year, but nonetheless, a lot of activity out there. But the first couple of bills kind of stumbled out of the gates. They had a bill, there was a bill to allow guns in county courthouses, and that one kind of got amended in committee to such an extent that there was so much confusion they ended up deferring action to a later day. And then there was another bill, the second gun bill that came up for a hearing, was one that would have removed the sales tax on guns, and that one also got quickly defeated and went nowhere. So those were the first two up.
All right, because it got defeated based on just how much money was at stake, do you think? Or what was some of the thought process on that from lawmakers?
Well, and that was really interesting, because the bill came up for a hearing in committee, and a Representative Tom Pischke, who's a Republican from Del Rapids, it was his bill. He gave 5 or 6 minutes of testimony in favor of the bill. During that testimony, he acknowledged that he's heard people say this might, you know, cost the state $3 or $4 million in tax revenue. And that seemed to be an acknowledgement of maybe what the arguments against the bill were. But we never got to hear the arguments against the bill, because as soon as he finished, someone on the committee made a motion to table, which was a non-debatable motion. And there was a second, and they quickly voted, and the bill went down 12-0. And
wow, fast, yeah.
Right. At the end, there was sort of a funny moment at the end when Mark Willitson, who was the committee chair, commented on the bill and sort of sympathized with Representative Pischke. And here's what Mark Willitson had to say.
Thank you, Representative Pischke. I hope your bill in the next committee goes better for you.
They sort of shut him down there, didn't they?
yeah. Wasn't, you know, when you think of gun bills in South Dakota, and they usually have a favorable airing, it wasn't exactly what I was expecting from that bill, for it to go down so fast and for it to end with laughter.
Right. All right. So tell us what some of the other conversation has been like, because it's, you know, it's not a rubber stamp just for anything that might be pro Second Amendment, but yet there's certainly, you know, a tone in Pier about what they're trying to do. What are some of the other voices that you heard, and how do they kind of contribute to this overall narrative?
Well, in the initial debate on allowing guns in courthouses, and the bill specifically as originally drafted sought to allow county employees to carry guns, there were people from two sides of the debate, one side essentially saying that these county employees are sitting ducks in these courthouses if anybody wants to do them harm. The other side saying that, you know, bringing guns into courthouses and courtrooms where there's can be emotions can run high is a bad idea. One of the voices arguing in favor of allowing county employees to carry guns is Paul Nabholz. He's a Fall River County Commissioner, and here's what he had to say.
They currently cannot protect themselves in a building that announces they are in a gun-free zone.
And then on the other side of the debate, Dick Teason is a lobbyist for the South Dakota Sheriff's Association, and the association took a position against the bill, and here's what Dick Teason had to say.
We question the wisdom of legislation
that would invite weapons into the courtroom.
And then there was also, I think we spoke about it last week, maybe a little bit, this notion of red flag laws. And where are we at in some of the process of these? Is there, are they moving forward?
Red flag law, I can give you an update. This morning, that bill was moved to the 41st day, so essentially it was killed. That bill was brought by Senator Arthur Rush from Vermilion, and he sought to create what he called risk protection orders, which would have allowed essentially law enforcement to go to court and say, we have information that this person is a danger to themselves or to others, and we want to get an order to temporarily seize their firearms. But that bill came up. I haven't had a chance to review, what the discussion was yet, but I did see that it was voted down 5-2 in a committee this morning.
Also, I want to bring listeners' attention to a story that you did that I thought was really compelling, and that was about the cost of search and rescue. And it was something I had never thought about before. So if people haven't listened to that story, give us a little bit of an idea of what's happening in Interior and some of the emotional testimony that we heard asking for assistance.
Yeah, so the bill comes from Senator Lance Russell from Hot Springs, and he has constituents, including people on the Interior Volunteer Fire Department, who are getting, by the testimony, it seems they seem to be getting a little fed up with having to foot the bill for search and rescue operations in Badlands National Park. The Interior Volunteer Fire Department serves a community of 105 people, but they're right next door to a national park that gets 1 million visitors per year. And they mentioned that, I think last year, I think they said they went on 14 search and rescue missions in the park, because they're in many circumstances, they're the nearest volunteer fire department, nearest search and rescue unit that can respond. And those search and rescue operations can be a half hour, or they can last for months as somebody, is lost in the park and they're looking for them. And so they also don't have much of a tax base. They serve a 1,200 square mile area, but only 18% of that area, they said, is privately owned land. The rest is government owned land, which is not taxed. And so they're not able to raise revenue off it. And apparently every dollar that they raise is one they fundraise themselves. So wow. When they have to gas up those trucks to go out to the Badlands and do a search, they have to pay for that with fundraising. They're all volunteers. So they're taking time out of their own schedule. So the bill asks for permission to basically try to get reimbursement of up to $1,000 from people who benefit from their rescue efforts, or presumably from those people's insurance.
All right. Who are we going to hear from here?
We hear from Chief McClure. Cliff McClure is the chief of the Interior Volunteer Fire Department. He spoke to that issue about the fact that they don't have much privately owned land.
Because we have not been able to figure out how we make 18% of our community taxpayers cover a national park and public lands.
And there was testimony on the other side. The Department of Public Safety, the State Department of Public Safety, actually testified against the bill. And Jason Husby from the department was sent to testify, and he gave this as his reason why he didn't think it was a good bill.
We have some serious concerns that those in crisis should be essentially discouraged from calling for help.
Fascinating. I never really had thought about it. I guess I assumed the feds were paying for some kind of search and rescue if something happened to you in Badlands National Park. Not the case, huh?
Well, and apparently it's different. I think some of this will come out as the bill continues to move forward. I have received some calls and tips from people that maybe the Forest Service, which is under the Department of Ag, has its own kind of programs for that kind of reimbursement. But, of course, Badlands is in the National Park Service, which is under the Interior Department, and they're different federal agencies. So there may be different treatment depending on which federal land you have at your doorstep.
Right. And here's your annual safety update. Don't be smart when you're using the outdoors in South Dakota as a general rule. Seth Tupper, stick with us here. I want to bring Jackie Hendry into the conversation. She's our healthcare and education reporter. And let's talk a little bit, Jackie, about some of the legislation you have been following recently. Let's start with education.
Yeah, so I was particularly interested in Senate Bill 66, which provides for the creation and funding of Ocheti Shekoe community-based schools. So these would be schools based in the Ocheti Shekoe Essential Understandings, which were curriculum standards developed over the last 10 years or so, really focusing on subject matter for educating students from basically pre-K to grade 12 on the Lakota, Nakota, and Dakota people. That was created partnering with tribal leaders, educators, cultural experts, and covers core topics from sovereignty and treaties to language.
All right. Something that's mandated?
No, actually. And that's part of the drive behind this bill. This curriculum is available through the Department of Ed, but it's optional. One of the proponents of this bill, Matthew Kuhl, he's director of operations for the Native American Community Academy Inspired Schools. It's an organization that develops schools like this. He also ranches on the Pine Ridge Reservation. And he says schools in the state are doing some things to be more welcoming for Native students, like powwow clubs and things like this. But he says Native students deserve more than that.
They deserve to have access to schools where Lakota language and culture is the foundation of their educational experience. They deserve to see themselves reflected throughout their entire curriculum, from the books and academic texts they read and are assessed on to the language they choose to speak. Not just because it's the right thing to do, but just as importantly because there's a vast body of evidence that shows us when we do those things, students are more academically prepared and more likely to experience success later in life when compared to the current school models being offered throughout the state.
All right, so this is Senate Bill 66. What else would it do?
Well, proponents also say that this making these schools just as an option for Native students would give those students a better chance at success by fostering an environment that better affirms their identities. It's not a secret that Native students trends in South Dakota, graduation rates are lower, things like this. And we heard multiple testimonies that students often feel outcast, especially in urban schools in South Dakota. And as an example of that, we have part of testimony from Sarah Pierce with the South Dakota Education Equity Coalition.
At the end of a really hard day of educational advocacy and in my various roles, both as an educational administrator as well as teacher prior to that, I am not afforded the opportunity to go home and take off my Indigenous cap and put it away. For I go home and I'm still a mother of Indigenous students who encounter challenges of being Indigenous boys in a public school system that is not unique to the needs of our people. My little boys with braids come home and talk about how they addressed students and had to defend their honor as men and their masculinity and their heritage to the young girls, but also to some of the untrained teachers in their buildings.
So we have this idea of students being made uncomfortable in schools that aren't as well versed in that cultural understanding. And while some of that is better in reservation schools, Matthew Kuhl says that when his young son is ready for kindergarten, he and his wife will end up having to choose among some of the lowest performing schools in the state when it comes to the public schooling. So he wants a better option.
All right. So Secretary of Education for South Dakota, Ben Jones, has talked about the gap. Mm-hmm. Is this something that he's supportive of?
No. He was among the opponents, as well as the governor's policy director in education and a variety of other organizations. Well, every single opponent agrees there's an issue, agree that they want to better serve Native students in South Dakota. They say that this bill isn't the best solution. Wade Pogany of the Associated School Boards of South Dakota expressed, for instance, concerns about who exactly has authority over these community-based schools.
There are over 30 chapters that dictate and talk about what schools have to do in governance. Those are my school boards. We have rules that we follow, and there are reasons for those rules in doing that. However, in this bill, you have one line that says that there is a description of school governance. We don't know what that means. We don't know if it's a separate board. We don't know if these are elected people. We don't know if they're appointed by someone. We have no idea what that means. And that is a fundamental piece of this bill that you can't ignore.
So some other issues raised, the funding process, clarity in the bill as far as other state standards and things like this, and advocacy groups like Wade Pogany, or representative groups, I should say, expressing that they wish they had been more involved in the drafting process than they were.
And they were not.
Not specific to the bill as introduced. Some conversations were in more general terms. The prime sponsor of the bill, Senator Troy Hinart, still expressed frustration because he says there were plenty of opportunities for those opponents to get involved, and he wasn't aware of some of their oppositions to the bill until 5 o'clock the night before the committee hearing. And here's some of the frustration that he expressed after their testimonies.
And what I heard today, well, we support it, but we can do it different. They don't have any ideas. We would have heard them. doing the same thing is not going to change our results. They don't live in my community. I do.
Jackie Henry, very briefly, what's next for this conversation?
Well, it's not dead yet. Senator Steinhauer moved to defer for a couple weeks to allow these parties to get together and discuss some of those issues, maybe come up with some amendments. So we'll hear more from this bill on February 13th, next Thursday.
Continuing in education, thank you, Jackie. I want to bring Stephanie Rissler into the conversation because you talked special education on South Dakota Focus. I'm going to ask you to kind of go a little quickly through some of this because we have so much to cover today. But tell us a little bit about what occurred on South Dakota Focus and some of the high points, please.
Well, quickly, we heard during the governor's State of the State address that special education may come up this session. We decided to pull together a group of folks to talk about what challenges they're seeing in their own districts. We had the director of special education with the South Dakota Department of Education on. There's a lot of questions about funding and what we may see. Her name is Linda Miller, and last Thursday she spoke specifically to funding.
So the state funding formula bill is out. That has to be passed through legislation every year through the budget process. This year we're looking at an 8% increase in the special ed funds due to a rebase that's required now every 2 years. Based on that, districts will see an increase in their funding, but not all districts in the state take state-level funding. Right. We only have about 47 of the districts that take state funding, so most of that is made up of local and through their federal grant dollars.
Now, Stephanie, I'm going to just jump in here. You said Linda Miller. Did you mean Linda Turner?
Or Linda Turner,
yes. There we go.
Yes.
Let's make sure we get that right. And I'm going to ask quickly to jump ahead to some of the legislation that we're sort of following, beyond the South Dakota Focus conversation. What's coming up in Pierre?
Well, as we did the show last week, there were few bills dropped in terms of special legislation regarding special education. We've seen some now, some that will deny applications for open enrollment for certain students with autism. We'll see a bill introduced by Senator Nessaba, an act to require the Department of Education to establish certain programs for children who are deaf and hard of hearing. We're also going to see some legislation specific to dyslexia and some additional autism legislation, all introduced at the end of last week. Linda Turner mentioned her office is going to be very busy as they sift through some of that legislation coming through.
And I highly recommend people go watch that entire South Dakota Focus on our website because it was a fascinating, lots of information there for folks in a topic that if it doesn't directly impact your life, you might not even think about it.
Right, yeah.
Lee Sturbridger, I want to bring you into the conversation here as we get ready to close because you've been following House Bill 1057, and Lee is joining us from the Capitol Building in Pierre. And this is this bill that criminalizes medical providers who prescribe puberty blockers or perform gender-affirming surgeries on those under the age of 16. And we've been following this throughout the week, but you're really trying to look into where this bill originated and how it came to be, and you talked with Fred Deutsch about this. Set up a little bit of this conversation with Fred Deutsch for us, please.
Sure, yeah. Like I said, trying to pin down the origins of this bill because this legislation is appearing in other states. And in the case of Florida, it's almost verbatim. But it's appearing in South Carolina, Colorado, Illinois, kind of similar versions. Like you said, I did have a chance to speak with Representative Deutsch on the House floor after they voted to approve it last week to talk about the origins of this bill and why he decided to bring it. He tells me that sometime around April last year, he started exploring Twitter more. And here's just a snippet of our conversation.
And I was overwhelmed with all the children I saw on Twitter. A lot of detransitioners. And many of them said, hey, go to Reddit. There's a detransition Reddit. And thousands. I think there's 8,000 or 9,000 members now. When I started on it, it was half that many. And of course, I don't know, there's some percentage that aren't detransition children, but many of them are. And that's what started my journey studying the issue and exploring it.
So when you said 9 months ago you started writing this bill, it was kind of around that time?
Yeah, within a month or so, I decided I want to look into South Dakota. I want to see if there's doctors doing it here. I want to explore what I could learn about the children here. And I found enough that I decided to write a bill.
Well, he said no specific surgeries that he was aware of were being performed here. He did say that puberty blockers and hormones are being prescribed in South Dakota. One fascinating thing that I found was that in October of 2019, Representative Deutsch attended a Heritage Foundation summit in Washington, D.C., and he provided the legislature with a bit of an update in an LRC document came out in the month of November, in which he said an idea or a solution discussed at this meeting that could benefit South Dakota was to establish legislation to criminalize doctors that provide sex change operations in children or for children. So I asked him what role that Heritage Foundation Summit played in crafting that legislation.
It didn't play any role in crafting it. In fact, by the time I went there, I was probably on my fifth or sixth version of the bill. I was able to share it with other states there. That was the role. So they didn't participate in it in any way. I may have participated in the other states' development by my participation at that conference.
And I followed up with the Legislative Research Council, which confirmed that Representative Deutsch traveled to D.C. in October to attend this conference. And he was reimbursed for about $2,500 in transportation, lodging, registration, and meal per diem costs. The bill is taking a bit of a different route in the Senate. In the House, it was heard by the State Affairs Committee, which is mostly comprised of leadership by each party. And in the Senate, it's scheduled for Senate Health and Human Services, which will get heard on February 10th. Recall, the House wanted to hear the bill in the first week, and it seems the Senate is taking their time with it.
Lee Sturbridger from the Capitol, Jackie Hendry here in Sioux Falls, Seth Tupper in Rapid City, and Stephanie Rissler in Vermilion. Thank you so much for all your help today. Jackie, in 30 seconds, from a healthcare perspective, there's an interesting bill coming up about cameras in nursing homes. What can you tell me about that really briefly?
Yes, so the idea to allow video footage, no audio recording, 24/7 in a nursing facility room with permission from everyone involved, sure, in that situation, that passed through unanimously in committee this week.
And that ties into this idea of with nursing homes closed. I originally thought it was something about, monitoring staff, but it has more to do with visiting and being able to see your loved one when it's further for you to travel. So lots to be discussed there.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
All right, we're going to have another roundtable next week with updates. I know Seth Tupper is following some legislation about the Star Academy property, and Lee's looking into CAFO regulation from the governor and so much more.